Do you like movies, comic books, science fiction, and more? Then you've come to the right place. This is the Rebel Radio Podcast. You can find us at therebelradiopodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show. Brand new episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast, our second to last episode of the year, as 2021's almost over. This is Mark.
This is Matt.
This is Long.
Long the...
He's elf? Just Long tonight.
Yeah.
Darn it.
Free for all.
It's just
Long the Lord of Darkness.
If there was a feature film, I didn't watch it.
You should not admit that, though.
Yeah, you shouldn't admit it.
Just was there a feature film?
Just go with it.
See if we can guess if you did or not.
Yeah?
Yeah. It'll be like
there's pretty much a feature film every week.
Yeah. He thought we were going back to the old
something about
old
a free-for-all. I thought it was this week, so.
Yeah.
No, you mentioned a free-for-all. I never mentioned a free-for-all at all. And then I came... When you texted that, I came back with that. I said, no, there's a movie planned for next week, too. You know, there's a free-for-all at the end of the show, probably, because we're retiring the top five after tonight. But that's a whole other, that's next week. But there is a featured film for next week, too, Long. So, keep up with the program, man.
Yeah, man.
So
I work 6 days this week, so I don't...
So, I mean, I work 40 hours a week and come home and cook and clean, take care of kids. So, you know, you're not getting sympathy from me on that. Just saying, man. Just saying. So, we all have our things we do. But anyway.
Like surf.
So, other than long. Yeah. How have y'all been? Good weeks? Okay weeks? Getting ready for Christmas?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. All of the above.
Yeah. My week wasn't too bad, actually. It was all right. Yeah. Still got a bunch of shit I got to wrap, but I'll get it done somehow.
Same. So. I haven't even started.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, you also have that wife hack, though, that can go and lock herself in the room and do it for you, you know?
That's true.
I don't have that. So. I don't know what that's, you know, the... Yeah, well, you know, then when even I did have the wife hack, she had this thing about waiting till the last minute. And then she'd bitch at me if I didn't want to help on Christmas Eve to do it all. And I'm like, you were fucking home during the day. You didn't do this while I was at work and stuff. It's like, yeah, so, yeah.
For real. Yeah, man. Can't then build like, Rome in one day.
Then like Long works 6 days a week. He's tired. I'm working 40 hours a week. I'm tired. Last thing I want to do is stay up till 2 in the morning on Christmas Eve wrapping shit, you know? And she used to get mad at me for that. So, whatever.
But no more.
No more. She is.
Now you take direction from yourself.
That's right. And I can yell at myself and be like, bitch, how come you haven't wrapped this shit? Which I did a little bit the
other day. Mark even changed his GPS voice to a man's voice so he don't listen to no woman. That's right.
That's right.
That's the kind of man he is.
I was having a little bit of anxiety the other day with how much I had to do before next Friday, but I calmed it down. So I'll be all right.
There we go.
But, and Long's over there just, bah humbug, fuck Christmas. I'm working 60 hours a week.
Don't worry, Long. It'll picking on me tonight.
Y'all picking on me tonight.
You kind of set yourself up for it, but that's okay.
Yeah. I kept my mouth shut after you insulted me 3 times straight, so let's move on.
Oh, 3 times straight? Damn. I don't think I insulted you. I didn't think I insulted you once. I just was giving a little flack back to you.
He was just
that's what men do. That's what men do. We fuck with each other. You know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I
got it like the week before last or something.
Well, then we fuck with Matt and text 500 times a week, man. I mean, you know, yeah. And was every other text for insulting Matt usually.
Matt's over at work, you know, watching jerk off videos.
Well, or this goddamn prank call, or his goddamn prank calls from work at 9 o'clock on Sunday night.
Oh, you enjoyed it. You listen to it, you're like, this is hilarious.
No, not really.
No?
Nope.
You want to divulge what the answering machine was?
No.
What it said?
It's only high schoolers prank call, man.
I'm not 12, man.
I don't know anyone your age that prank calls. Anyone?
That's why I said when it happened, I knew immediately who it was. There's no one else on this planet that I know who's going to do that except for Matt. So it's just like, I feel sorry for Jackie sometimes. It's like she's raising five boys, not four.
Biggest kid in the room. Look,
we have Roy D. Mercer here amongst us.
Roy D. Mercer.
But, man, let's get into the show, man. It's a big show, man. A big feature film to talk about, and a big movie that hit theaters this weekend, and which we're almost going to jump right into. Download this where we talk what we watched, streamed, or checked out this week. Because I didn't really watch anything at all this week. Didn't have time to watch the feature film. I didn't have time to watch anything extra but the feature film because the feature film.
I totally forgot what it was.
Because the feature film is almost 4 hours. And but I did go to the theaters, as y'all did too, as the next big Marvel epic hit theaters this weekend with Spider-Man No Way Home. And just in case you haven't seen it yet, we're going to go full spoiler on this because there's no way to talk about it without going full spoiler, just because that much happens in this movie that needs to be talked about, as you guys would agree. Well, I saw it this morning. You know, I know you guys saw it yesterday, and I walked out of it pretty damn satisfied. I'm not quite ready to crown it as the best Spider-Man film because I still think Spider-Man 2 is a little better. You know, my basic review of this is that it's out of the MCU, I think it might be the second best MCU movie behind possibly Endgame. But I think this is a little clunky in the middle of the film that keeps it from being as good as it could have been. The middle of the film drags a bit. But the last hour of this film is incredible. Some of the best Spider-Man.
Man, everything that doesn't have action drags for you, man.
No, that's not true at all. It's a pretty clunky film in the middle of it. It really is. If you really were paying attention, there's some stuff that just like – it's like, okay, taking all the villains.
I feel like it was clunky. I feel like it was slow. Like it slowed down, but I didn't feel
like it
slowed
down a little bit. It's a little. Some of the decisions made in the film felt a little misguided to me. Peter's smarter than that. Why the fuck would he take these villains to this house? You know, all that was just like, huh? It's almost like he made bad decision after bad decision in this movie. And that kind of was like, Peter's better than that. You know?
Isn't he also a kid?
Or the fact that he won't shut up during the spell.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I felt the same way.
That I think about it.
Yeah. I like the premise. Like, why wouldn't you just send everyone back? They're going to die. They're bad guys. You know?
Yes. But, that's kind of what I'm trying to hit on. You're exactly right, Matt. It was a little bit like, wait, what? What's he doing? Yeah. But those moments set up the amazing last hour of the film. But getting to that last hour of the film, it was kind of like, wait, what's going on here? And I think that's my only beef of the movie. Overall, though, my initial assessment overall is it's really fucking good. And we'll get into spoilers in a minute, but that's my initial assessment.
Yeah, I think I'm ready to say it's the best Spider-Man movie. Two, I really, really like two. And I said no to Homecoming. I said no to Far From Home. That two is first. I feel like slight edge out just because of what we get in the film and the lessons learned in the film by Tom Holland's character. I feel like it just had a lot for me, more than just the action. I feel like he grew, as Spider-Man, and he matured a little bit and had to make some decisions that maybe he wouldn't have made in his, younger, he obviously wasn't willing to make earlier in the film, but yeah, that's just how I feel about it. I think it's the best. And I was you know, I enjoyed the film. You know, that's without going into too much spoilers. That's probably my review of it.
I thought we are spoiling it.
Well
no, we are. We're doing our initial review at first.
It's a fun movie. I liked it. But we'll dig into it deeper. But what are you guys' scores? Well, I'm scoring it like a B plus, A minus in that range.
Yeah, I think an A minus.
Yeah.
I guess A
minus. I mean, the pacing in the middle. The pacing in the middle, I thought it was fine. I didn't get bored at all. I was interested in what character development was coming out of that, you know?
Well, in that regard, yeah, I can agree. It's definitely a strong story arc for Tom Holland's version of Peter Parker.
Yeah. But it really emphasized Aunt May's compassion, you know,
mm-hmm.
for flawed people. And she's not really up. It sucks. But we'll get into all that.
Oh yeah.
But it's cathartic moments in the middle of that part of the film that really pushed things to the edge, as far as personal conflict and values and, you know, so.
Right. Well, and that said, I did feel like a lot of that. I felt like the first two Spider-Man films with Tom Holland were missing some of that values that Spider-Man's built around. Like, they were there, but they weren't as front and center as they were, especially in the Maguire films and even in the Garfield films. And they finally were able to bring that into this film. And I did like that. And I did like his story arc, bringing the maturity of Peter Parker in this film. How we got there could have maybe been handled a little differently with some of the mistakes he's made as a character. But I think the emotional weight of it was so strong, and this is where we'll get into some spoiler territory, where May is trying to be to guide him and teach him that not everybody is bad, and it unfortunately results in her death. And that moment in the film was very powerful, and it definitely matures Peter a long way into realizing, like, you know, his actions have consequences. And that's one thing we finally got around to in the Holland trilogy, is those values of responsibility that Spider-Man was strongly built upon in the Stan Lee and Steve Ditko comic books.
Yeah.
Yeah, that I didn't expect that. And, you know, it's like I thought it was going to go a different way, but I guess you know, she had to go away because it's an important part of Peter's arc, you know, losing I guess whether it be, you know, witnessing Aunt May or witnessing Uncle Ben dying and feeling that, you know, sense of, you know, responsibility for their death is important for him. And I guess he had to happen for him to experience it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which I think that moment in the film is what made the last hour that more powerful. That despite him being extremely, you know, the Green Goblin is ultimately the one who ends up causing May's death, and it brings Peter around where he's angry and he wants revenge as anyone would, but he has to still make the right decisions to cure these villains that have come across through the multiverse. And you know, he gets some help from a couple other familiar faces, which was probably the worst kept secret in the world in the last 6 months, that and it's more spoiler territory here, that, you know, Toby and Andrew Garfield are in the film as their respective Spider-Mans. And they help him come along that way to realize that there's more to being Spider-Man. And you have to face your consequences. And they show him the way that, you know, this, and they work together and this can be done. That's another thing. I was thinking like the return of the Spider-Mans was going to be a little more epic. And then it's just sort of Ned opening up a portal because he gets Doctor Strange's portal thing. And I'm like,
yeah, that's the focusing tool. Yeah.
Yeah. But at the same time, I thought about the way the villains appeared and how epic it was. So maybe it was okay that the Spider-Mans were a little more low key, you know, but at the moment in the, when it happens in the film, I was like thinking, man, I thought it was going to be like way more epic, you know, like when all the heroes return in Endgame, you know, I thought it was going to be something of that magnitude, you know? So it took me a minute to accept that after the film was over, I was like, okay, it's fine. I can handle it. Cause it was still cool, you know, to see that happen.
And William Dafoe, man, acted his ass off, didn't he? I mean, just like went way over the top. I felt like not like too much over the top, but I felt like he was, you know, even
it's Willem.
Willem Dafoe. Willem. Yeah.
Who, yeah. Not William.
Who was over William. The top?
Well, yeah, I felt William. Well, yeah.
But you go back and watch Spider-Man 1. He's pretty over the top in that too. You know,
he was like super maniacal though.
Yeah.
Like he put, but no, you know, it's kind of how he played the character. Hospital, but yeah. You know, I feel like he
technically, hey, he said the I meme.
Yeah. He said what?
He said the meme.
Yes.
He was in containment. Yeah. It's like, you know, I'm a bit of a scientist myself.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, everyone laughed.
That was
in the
pretty funny. I actually, I kind of felt like Toby was fine. I kind of felt like Andrew Garfield felt like, cause he hadn't played this character in about 10 years. And at the time I thought Garfield
Has
was
it
a
been
fine 10 Peter.
Years.
About 10 or 11 years since Amazing Spider-Man films came out. And at the time I felt that, Peter Parker was good. You know, he's fine. He's more like a skateboarder type Peter Parker, but it feels like cause Garfield has moved on to more serious roles and things like that. He felt like, I don't know, his acting felt a little out of place in this, like he was trying to refine the character, but I was okay with it too. You know, it just felt a little off at first. But I think it's also less
like a guy looking for redemption.
Yeah.
You know,
and it felt like a little less familiarity with his Spider-Man compared to Toby's. But he did have redemption essentially when he catches.
Yeah, I never watched the Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah. The first one's legitimately good. The second one, yeah, but the first one I really like.
Yeah, second one has its moments, but I felt like the way they went with Electro, I just kind of weird how they, you know, his battle with Peter just felt off to me.
Yeah,
in this movie or in that movie?
In that movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I heard Jamie Foxx is really happy with the way he was able to portray Electro in this film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was better than Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, I'd never seen it.
Well, and it was cool because he in Amazing Spider-Man 2, you know, Gwen falls to her death and Peter's not able to save her, so he was able to have that redemption when he catches MJ, and I thought that was really cool that they did it that way. So he got some redemption.
And for me, with a fresh perspective, I thought Andrew Garfield was great. Honestly, I never watched his two films, so for me, I thought he did good as his version of Spider-Man or Peter Parker.
Yeah,
so I didn't think he was funky at all.
If you get a chance, I'd give the first one a watch. You could probably skip the second, but he's legitimately good in the first one. I actually really like that Spider-Man movie. It was cool that we got a moment with all three of them together as they all landed on screen and we got that big moment. And I guess I was looking for a little more wow moments like that with all three Spider-Men in it. But at the same time, in my wildest dreams, 20 years later, since first Spider-Man came out in 2002, I never thought I'd see a film like this. So that alone as a fanboy was just like, wow, this is cool. You know? And I think that whole last hour, I was just really trying to take it all in and just really enjoy it because, like, this is badass seeing all these Spider-Mans on screen. Because I never would have thought they would have brought them all together, you know, that Sony and Marvel would have come to this agreement and to do this. And that's what's really cool about it. And as fans, we really should be appreciative that we got this movie because it's a pretty incredible feat that they pulled it off.
Yeah. I think
Matt was spoiling himself throughout the year. He wouldn't just ignore the rumors. He just had to try to campaign it with me and Mark.
I had to know.
On texting. Yeah. And they're like not appreciating that we want to kind of don't want to hear about spoilers. But Matt just wants to spoil it. So,
I scream it from a mountain.
One other cameo that we is Matt Murdock's Charlie Cox's Matt Murdock is officially canon now. That was cool.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
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 I like his little catch. How'd you do that? I'm a really good lawyer.
Yeah, I like that too. That was a cool moment. It happened so early on in the film that you almost forgot about it by the time you got to the end of the film.
I thought he'd have a bigger role, but I guess, it would have taken away from
it. It's just setting him up for the future. Spider-Man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Benedict Cumberbatch is great, and this is Doctor Strange as always. For me, he's only been in his film and the two Infinity War films and now this, but I just feel like Benedict is as good in his role as Robert Downey Jr. was as Stark. Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah. Was he? But it was it was a post-credit scene though, wasn't it?
No. Remember, they go to Earth looking for his dad, and then he makes Loki infinitely fall.
But it's it's only a few seconds though, isn't it? He's not in the film very much. More,
like 10 minutes tops. Yeah.
Really?
5 to 10.
Doctor Strange is in the movie that long?
Damn. Yeah.
I don't remember. But Benedict Cumberbatch though, I was saying though that he, Cumberbatch is for me is like Robert Downey Jr. He just absolutely owns a role. It feels like he feels like Doctor Strange out of the comics. And that's that's a cool thing. So he does his part in this movie with helping Peter, and everybody's seen the trailers of what he does. And then of course, Zendaya, she's great as MJ. I really like her character, and they even confirmed that she's not, not Mary Jane. She's
Mary Jones,
Mary Watson. Jones Watson, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's an alternate universe version. The ending of this film is probably the only thing that I was like, man, do they have to really end it that way? Because everyone forgets Peter. So it's kind of a tragic, sad ending for Peter, And the scene in the coffee shop is just absolutely heartbreaking for his character, And it's just like he's been through so much and so much tragedy. And then when they have to end us with that until we meet Peter again and what happens next. And that was a little bit kind of like, you get why they did it in the sense of the story.
Yeah. Yeah, man. And it looks like Felicia Hardy's going to be his classmate.
She appears in one of the other movies.
Yeah. Going to get the black cat.
Maybe. Maybe. Did y'all stay through the credits, of course?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, Venom goes back.
Yeah, kind of a continuation of the post-credit scene from Let There Be Carnage, where Tom Hardy's Venom is trying to figure out how he got in this world. And I guess we know now he must have been brought over during the spell. And he's going to go find his Spider-Man and find out what's going on. So that could be cool. Then the little trailer at the end for the next Doctor Strange film was pretty neat looking. So,
oh yeah,
and that was a really long credit sit as I had to go pee really bad after a 2.5 hour movie.
Same here.
I'm like, hurry up! God damn you, Marvel! I was like, I know you're setting up these next films, but it's like, can we just do them after the little first, 5 minutes of credits, and then let's just show us the scenes? Don't make us wait 20 minutes.
Yeah. And I like that it looks like we're going to get a little bit of that what if. Animated episode, I think it's like episode 3, where Stephen Strange loses his heart instead of his hands, becomes a Sorcerer Supreme and starts using evil magic and stuff. It looks like there's another Strange.
Well,
either that or it's
some sort of return of Dormammu, because if I remember right in the comics, Dormammu could take different, forms and things like that. So,
maybe.
He didn't never really exactly killed him. He just sort of tricked him into, reversing the spell in the original film. So,
yep,
we'll see. which was a lot of hardcore Doctor Strange's fans' beefs with that film, where like you took another major villain like Fantastic Four did in the Silver Surfer movie, and you basically dumbed down the villain in that Doctor Strange movie. So maybe he's still around, you know. So we'll see.
Maybe.
But overall, man, I think coming off this movie fresh, though, I just don't know if I could quite put it over Spider-Man 2 just yet, maybe with another viewing. But overall, I really liked it. It was just satisfying as a fan to see the three Spider-Mans together and to see.
I'm surprised you guys haven't talked about Doc Ock's redemption arc.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I had called that a while back when the trailers came out. I think I don't know if I said on the show, but I know I said to somebody, I said, Doc Ock's not the villain in this. They're like, what? I go, no, he's going to help him watch. And sure enough, you know, I kind of just had that feeling, you know.
Yeah. I mean, where else is he going to go? Stay a villain?
Right.
Yeah.
Because he's always been that tragic villain that was never – Doc Ock was never really a bad guy in the early days. He got crazier and madder over the years. He was always that fine line between trying to do the right thing and be a scientist and just went the wrong way about doing it, you know. But it was great to see Alfred Molina on screen again, reprising that role. You know, it's like he stepped right back into it, and he was so good. And it was a nice story arc for him to see his redemption.
Why are you going for me?
Yeah, I'd be interested to hear what Sam Raimi thought of the movie.
Oh, yeah. I wonder what he's going to comment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And now that he's directing Doctor Strange too, which would be interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sure he had to see it because they watch all these movies so they can make sure they're tying things together properly and, you know, with all the different story arcs going on. But I strangely think that Raimi's probably pretty proud of it. You know, I think he would like – I think he likes the movie, you know, because it's a solid film. I do agree it's the best of the three Tom Holland films, that's for sure. And with another viewing, it could pass up Superman 2. There's a lot of fan service to really like as a fan.
Yeah, I kind of actually tie it with Homecoming, because Homecoming was his own original story, didn't have to rely on past films for its own unique story, and I thought the Condor was a pretty cool villain in that film, too, but in this one, I was kind of thinking in the back of my mind, like, how much of the nostalgia helped the success of this film overall, you know? So,
right.
Not to poo-poo on it or anything like that, but I thought it was used in a way that I thought that wasn't very pandery, and it really served the story pretty well.
That's fair enough.
Yeah, film history and all that.
And speaking of,
I am mad, Michael, that they didn't bring in Japanese Spider-Man from the TV show from the 70s with his black web.
Nicholas Hammond
Spider-Man. Oh, yeah. Well, speaking of which, yeah, I love how they talked to the original Peter Parker about his naturally occurring
web. Where else does it come out of?
Yeah.
Nowhere else.
That was pretty funny.
Nowhere else. Yeah. Talked about the Avengers. Who are the Avengers?
Like a band?
Yeah. I fought a purple alien in outer space. You went to outer space?
Yeah.
All that good stuff.
No, I did like the little banter between the three of them. That was good. I don't know what else to say about this movie other than
go watch
it. It's really well done. Yeah, really well done overall. Yeah.
I think the only thing
I'd say is Michael Keaton's Vulture. Like, I almost felt like maybe he could have been in this movie because Holland had none of his villains in this movie. And then it would have maybe had – you would have had a Sinister Six thing going there, but it would have been too many characters. It was already a lot of characters to deal with, you know, and make sure the story is told properly. But – you know, I guess Keaton's Vulture's in the Morbius movie. They showed that trailer in front of it, and I was like, oh, that's interesting.
Plasma! I mean, where's my plasma?
Well, now they're
making
plasma.
The movie doesn't look terrible, but I'm not going to rush out to see it. You know, I don't think the trailer's bad for it or anything. It's just like, yeah.
Do we get Sergi the Hunter, the movie, or do we get the Punisher? That's a question. Because Sergi in the comics hunts Morbius, but so does the Punisher. So I wonder if Morbius is a way to kind of get in one of those characters. That's something down the road, you know.
Possibly. So we'll see. But yeah, go see Spider-Man No Way Home in theaters now. Good, fun movie. I really enjoyed it, for sure. So yeah. All right. Well, man, that was a long download this, but that's okay. That was a big movie to talk about. And now we have a big movie to talk about celebrating its 20th anniversary since this epic trilogy began in 2001. A lot of anticipation behind this from when it was announced in around 1998 when they started filming this. They filmed all three movies back to back. It was a huge gamble for New Line Cinema at the time because something like this had never been done before. Because if the first film fails, ultimately you have two more movies. What if they're not successful? But absolutely, they did not fail. They made tons of money. Every single film in the trilogy was nominated for lots of awards. They won lots of awards, and it's well deserving. And the first film in that trilogy is The Lord of the Rings: The Fellowship of the Ring. Man, this, I actually saw this like four times in theaters. Not gonna lie. I don't know how. I think I saw it, then someone else wanted to go see it. Then they put a preview for The Two Towers at the end of it. I was like, man, I got to go back and see the preview for The Two Towers. Then I think I saw it a fourth time because someone else wanted to go. this is a trilogy that rewatching the film this week is like, this is what the Star Wars sequels could have been. You know, just truly epic movies. And that's the best way to describe Lord of the Rings is absolutely. Peter Jackson's films are absolutely epic. Everything's there on screen, from great special effects, great acting, to movies that aren't afraid to take the quiet moments in the film and let them shine and not rush to the action. These are remarkable, remarkable films. And I know we all saw them in theaters. When, I don't know, well, Matt, did you see them in theaters when they came out? You were a little bit younger.
Yeah, I saw them in theaters.
And
I was in high school.
And, yeah. And just movies that are – might be the biggest trilogy of the millennium of the new century so far, because people are still talking about these 20 years later. They're held in high regards by moviegoers, Tolkien fans, and it has its Tolkien distractors. There are people out there that don't like them, but you know what? You're not going to please everybody. I saw these movies with no, I had never read the books. I knew what the story was kind of. So I just went into them to enjoy them as films and enjoy them. I did. These are remarkable films. And that's my initial first thoughts on The Fellowship of the Ring.
Yeah. I didn't watch it in the theaters because I knew nothing of Lord of the Rings except for the prequel of The Hobbit, which I saw the original Rankin and Bass 2D cartoon movie.
Mm-hmm.
Was it Rankin and Bass? But that's the only Lord of the Rings related thing I've ever seen. And, or not.
Rankin and Bass did The Hobbit, and then Bashki did the Lord of the Rings film. The King. Which those were done by Rankin and Bass. There's an animated version of Hobbit and Return of the King that are done by Rankin and Bass, and then Bashki did the Lord of the Rings film.
Yeah, you're right. And Ralph Bakshi, And and then I watched it at home. I think I rented it on VHS, and it came in a double VHS pack, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I bought it blind or, but I remember enjoying the film quite a lot. I loved the lore of the film. The first opening act kept. It's like one of my most rewatched opening scenes of any movies because of the lore that it explored, the introduction and all. I love it. Talking about how all the armies are gathered and Sauron's defeat and the introduction of the ring, the power of the One Ring.
Mm-hmm.
And really liked, you know, the adventures of Bilbo and the other hobbits, and exploring the worlds and the different parts of Middle-earth, from the Shire through the Elven woods, forests.
Bree.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And definitely saw all of the root of Dungeons and Dragons main inspiration, you know? And, yeah, you can definitely tell that Lord of the Rings is such an influential fantasy series in books and in films. But, yeah, I mean, all the tropes of elves and dwarves and halfling people, it all branched off and influenced by Lord of the Rings. So, yeah.
Well, and it was a series that was believed for many years to be unfilmable because of the technology we had. And Peter Jackson started developing this as early as, I believe it was like 93, 94. He started writing scripts for it and getting story ideas. And he basically said, "It's unfilmable. Hold my beer. I'll show you a way to do it." And he presented his pitch to New Line Cinema, you know, of an idea of three films. And at first New Line was like, "Well, let's do it in two films." And he said, "No, if you're going to do this, you have to do it the right way. You have to make three movies and you have to tell the story." And he showed them special effects tests and things like that. They found ways to save a lot of money by using new technology to create these armies of orcs and stuff, where it wasn't as expensive as it could have been if they used many people in costumes, or if they used massive CGI stuff. They use a different type of CGI technology where they basically map these orcs on top of each other, and so you weren't having to double build the CGI models. You could build them on top, and you would just change things a little bit, and believe it or not, that saved them a ton of money instead of modeling every single character differently. So they created new technology for this, and new ways to do digital backgrounds and things like that. And with Weta Digital, that was even different than the way they did the Star Wars prequels, the way they did this. It was different types of digital backgrounds. And that's why these movies, you hear about these movies, and each movie had about a $200 million budget, which at the time was a lot of money in 2001. But these movies look really great considering that what they cost back then. And even watching this week, they hold up extremely well. And just a great cast too. Everyone acts their asses off in these movies. And I think that sells the film. Like you said, the lore of it all, the fantasy world of it all, it doesn't work if it's not really well acted, extremely well directed. The cinematography is amazing in these movies. And the musical score by I can't remember who scored this film. James Horner, I believe, right? No, it's not Horner. Howard Shore. Howard Shore did the Lord of the Rings films. And its score is iconic already. You know, and all that's brought together into this amazing, amazing film that tells the first part of this epic three-part story.
Yeah, I remember when this came out. My dad wasn't a big movie guy, wasn't a big theater guy, but every year we went to go see it, and that's all everyone talked about at school. Whenever you know, the first weekend had passed, everyone was just like, "Lord of the Rings, Lord of the Rings," and I, for me that. The film the moment that stuck out for me was the Aragorn when he fights the Uruk-hai, and he's just like, you know, showing that he doesn't feel any pain, and he like brings his sword right into his gut, like he doesn't feel it, and he pulls it out, chops his head off. That was my favorite scene of the film.
Not to interrupt you, but how great is Viggo Mortensen? It was almost played by Stuart Townsend, but they filmed about 3 weeks of Stuart Townsend, and he wasn't getting along with anybody. Peter Jackson wasn't feeling it, so they called Viggo up because he screen tested. He's like, "Yeah, I'll do it." And now you can't imagine anyone else in that role because Viggo. Yeah,
at the behest of his son.
Yeah,
Viggo's son wanted him to do it. Yeah,
mm-hmm. And he's so good in this movie.
You couldn't replace any of these guys.
No. No, Viggo's easily my favorite character. His character is Strider and Aragorn. I mean, his ultimately, you could argue that the Lord of the Rings is as much about his story arc as it is about getting this ring in the fires of Mount Doom. and him coming to terms with his legacy throughout the three films. And it all starts in this film. And you were just talking about the battle at the end of the movie when he sees Frodo's sword glowing and he turns around and it's such a great shot by Peter Jackson where it's kind of slow motion. He comes around with his sword out and he's just like, let's go, dude. So I'm going to kick y'all's ass. And it's almost like in that moment, he accepts what he has to do, you know, and it's wonderful. And I think that's what this makes these movies so good. Or there's so many great moments like that. And my favorite moment in the movie is actually a quiet moment. And it's where Frodo and Gandalf are sitting in the cave and they spot Gollum down below. And Frodo tells him, you know, I've never wanted this to happen. And Gandalf gives a great speech. Like, none of us that ever have anything like this happen want this to happen. And I actually have a poster. I forgot I had it. Rewatching this made me look, and I went and found it. I had ordered a limited edition poster with that quote from the movie back when this came out. And I'm going to try to find a frame and frame that bad boy now because I forgot I had it. And rewatching it kind of made me remember. And it's a really great looking poster.
Yeah, it's a good thing you mentioned Ian McKellen because my first impression of Gandalf, really not knowing the character, was a little bit from The Hobbit. He was kind of mysterious and somewhat aloof.
Yeah.
But in this portrayal of Gandalf, he was very warm and welcoming. That's the one thing that I did not expect. You know, and he had a sense of humor about him. A warm humanity of Gandalf, but but at the same time, you could sense that he's a very powerful being, that he had some gravitas behind those warm, welcoming eyes, you know? So that's a very remarkable feat of acting, you know, I guess that Shakespearean training helps a lot. Royal Shakespeare training and all that. But yeah, Ian Holm also as Bilbo.
Good one.
Yeah, he was most famous for narrating the radio show of The Hobbit. So, and I guess Peter Jackson wanted Ian Holm on it as well. So another Shakespearean actor.
And a big surprise for me in the film too is Liv Tyler. I mean, at this point in her career, you know, she was known as, you know, the Aerosmith video girl because she's Steven Tyler's daughter. And she hadn't done a whole lot of, like, you know, she'd done some films, but nothing. And to put her in a film like this, it's extremely well acted and a really important movie. And she's really, really good in it. And I was reading, she was very similar to Dave Bautista. When Dave Bautista got cast in Marvel, he wanted to learn how to act and be better. Liv Tyler did the same thing. She took some extra acting lessons and she really went out there and did her best to act in this film amongst everyone else. She took the time to learn the Elven language. And she really kind of grew up in her own way in this movie, and she's really good in it. And then, Peter Jackson gives her a little extra to do in this movie. For people that don't know, I don't know a lot about the books, but I do know when the Ringwraiths are chasing the hobbits, that in the film it's actually Legolas that or in the book it's actually Legolas that saves them. But in the movie they have Arwen save them instead, so they give her a little bit more to do. And that's fine. You know, it makes for a really cool moment. It's an awesome moment where she comes in and saves him and washes the ring race away. So that was my big surprise, was just how good Liv Tyler is in this movie.
Yeah. That way she's not just a damsel, you know, make her, you know, give her a little bit more, depth to what she is capable of as far as battle.
And that's kind of what Peter Jackson said. He said he felt Legolas already had plenty to do throughout the movies, so he wanted her to have more to do, and it works extremely well.
Yep.
And, and we even talk about the flip side of Ian McKellen's Gandalf is the great Christopher Lee playing Saruman, who was I feel like watching this, I feel like Christopher Lee's just having a really good time. You know, he's owning this character. He's having fun playing this villain and it shows on screen. And I don't mean fun in a campy way. Like, he truly goes out and gives it all. And it feels like he's just having a great time. And then when the scene is over, him and Ian McKellen are probably laughing about it. That's just kind of the vibe I get from his Saruman. Yeah. You know, just like, I'm just going to own this shit. And he does. You know,
I watched all three films this week. I did it. And
how do you have that kind of
extended
time?
Versions too. Well, what helped was that, you know, we were recording on a Saturday.
He was watching for me, Mark. He was watching.
Is that what it was?
I watched Two Towers Friday night, and then this morning, end of this afternoon, I had Return of the King on. And man,
you saw Spider-Man yesterday and Two Towers? How do you do that? It's like, geez.
I watched Two Towers at night. I stayed up all the way till 2 in the morning. Yeah. But man, you know, just him in Two Towers too, and then that scene he has in the beginning of Return of the King, whenever they're trying to get some information from him, he's still strong in all three films, all three performances. I love hearing his voice. I miss the guy. I wish we still had him, you know. Got that powerful voice. He sounds like he probably was a wizard.
The thing with Christopher Lee is that what he did annual readings of Lord of the Rings once a year.
I believe so.
And he really wanted to play Gandalf.
Right.
And the thing with Christopher Lee and a couple of actors I know I've read some interviews about was that their performance was good in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, but Peter Jackson was notorious with doing so many takes for a scene. And I can only imagine them trying to keep up a certain energy, repeating themselves that many times.
Yeah,
sure.
And doesn't sound like a lot of hard work on paper, but when you actually try to act a certain way and try to project that sense of realism 20 times straight, at least for takes. there's been a couple of clips where Christopher Lee does kind of blow up at Peter Jackson bit, you know, it's like, I've done this line so many times and in so many ways, why do I have to keep doing all these takes? Go to the editing room and pick the one that you like the most, please. You know, it's like
I read that somewhere too. I read that too. Like Jack Black didn't really want to work with him again after King Kong because of that reason. Because Jack Black was like, it was just too much. We watched the extended versions for this and. The extended versions came out, you know, I guess a year or two after these films came out, or every year, I guess. I think they put out the extended version every year just before the new one came out. And this mm-hmm. film probably has about this movie probably has about 20 minutes added to it. I mean, if you watch the movie on my Vudu, it says it's 3 hours and 48 minutes, but it actually ends like at the 3:21 mark. There's almost 25 minutes of credits. And the theatrical version was 3 hours. They add about 20 minutes. The stuff they add in this doesn't add a whole lot to the story. There's some extra shots of the hobbits in the Shire at the beginning. The shots of them all receiving their gifts from Galadriel. The shot of the elves leaving the forest and things like that. So there's some little things like that they add into it. And if you believe the rumors out there that Elijah Wood and other actors over the years have said that there's a lot more stuff they filmed we haven't even seen yet. Apparently, there's full 4 hour versions of each film that exist out there. That's been the rumor. So who knows if you know one day Peter Jackson decides to release those on the 25th anniversary of the film or something like that.
Release the Jackson.
But that's been the word. There's even longer versions of these movies out there. Well, Jackson has said before he's done. He's fine with the extended versions, but you know, money talks. You know, who knows one day if they'll put out different versions of these movies. But I think the extended
version is they're perfect for their pacing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And honestly, I think Fellowship's extended version isn't needed. I think at 3 hours it works. I do like the extended stuff in The Return of the King because I remember it adds quite a bit to the film. I remember the Two Towers not – I think the Two Towers doesn't – the stuff they add to that is not really all that important either if I remember right. It's really The Return of the King has the most important stuff that's added in.
In Two Towers, you find out that Aragorn is part of that line of men who have an unnaturally long life, and that he's actually as old as King Theoden, but he just doesn't look it. That's one thing you learn there that's pretty cool. But other than that, I forget what's in there. Other than that,
Yeah.
I mean, but, longer doesn't always mean better. I mean, look at the Hobbit trilogy.
Yeah.
And right. The extended versions on those. I'm like,
yeah.
A lot of people are like, there's nothing in here that's necessary.
The first one I thought was good.
The first one was solid.
Yeah, it felt it was just better like than the I book, expected. You know?
Yeah.
You even had the troll, the scene with the trolls. That was good. Yeah. And the spiders.
I like the. Even the second Hobbit film's not bad. The third one, it's just, you know, third one kind of drags.
You know, the second one really got on my nerves when I was watching it in theaters, you know, and I was thinking in the back of my mind, it's like, man, this movie is long, and I can't imagine the extended version having being longer. I enjoyed the smog scenes and stuff, but the one scene that really irritated the hell out of me was when they went up to the secret doorway of the Smoky Mountain, right? And they couldn't figure out how to open it, and then they walk away from the door all dejected. They couldn't open it. And then Bilbo figures out how to open up the secret door, and then everyone comes back with dramatic music, and then all of a sudden there's like the door's open, but they're not entering because they have to do a super pose before like the super dramatic the door's open pause, right? And all the whole party's not, they're staring at some sun or something while Peter Jackson is kind of like glorifying in their triumph. And I was like thinking, just walk into the damn vault, please. I get the point, you know. You don't need to be all dramatic on everything.
I've only seen the extended version.
And that was the theatrical version.
Yeah, I never saw the extended version of the other two. I saw the extended version of the first one.
Which right there in your statement, in your statement right there alone is like, I have no desire to see extended.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
Well, you know, it's funny. Richard Armitage, who played the lead dwarf in those, you know, he was supposed to be in Lord of the Rings, but I guess they couldn't find a part for him and schedule didn't work out. And that's kind of why Peter Jackson brought him back around to be in the Hobbit films. So he still got to be part of the lore of these stories. That's a whole
nother. It would have been interesting to see Guillermo del Toro's version of him.
Yeah. Yeah, they were just taking too long
with pre-production, with legal issues and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And has Jackson made a film since the last Hobbit movie? He didn't make that Mortal Engines a couple years. Yeah, he produced that Mortal Engines movie, but I don't think he directed it. Yeah, he wasn't a director.
Didn't he make one with Olympian people or something?
Yeah, but I think that was a documentary.
That movie. No.
I know he made The Lovely Bones in between Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. But yeah, I don't think he's done too much. So, but, you know. But I mean, all the money and awards
he did, he made They Shall Not Grow Old. Yeah, World War One film.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, all the money he made for Lord of the Rings movie, he never probably has to direct again. So, you know. But you know, it's a. The Fellowship of the Ring, though, what can you say about this trilogy, though? Then all three films are extremely great. It's hard to even have a favorite in these movies. And eventually we're going to discuss the other two. We might not even wait and do these every year. We might spread these out a few months apart and do the Two Towers here in a few months and do Return of the King at the end of the year. Because, you know, 2 years is a long way to wait. Who knows, we'll be podcasting in 2 years. And I would like to cover this complete trilogy at some point. But this is definitely a good start. I really like this movie a lot. It's easily an A+. I mean, it's a remarkable movie, well acted.
Oh, yeah.
This is the Lord of the Rings trilogy is the reasons you go to the movies, for great stories, epic storytelling, well acted, great special effects, great costumes, great set pieces. It has everything that you want in a motion picture. And Peter Jackson's obviously heavily influenced by old Westerns and old war films and stuff, and it all shows on screen because it's very much shot and acted like old school films in a lot of ways, but with modern effects.
And the speeches, the inspiring speeches throughout the films.
Yeah, funny enough, this is actually my least favorite Lord of the Rings film.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. To me, my favorite is the Return of the King. I mean, for me, the first movie is the building block, the foundation, you know, the starting point, of course.
Yeah.
And all the important plot threads started there. But for me, all the payoff was Return of the King is my favorite. And then the Two Towers and Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. But I might put Lord of the Rings more in the middle now, because the Two Towers, despite its epic battle scene, has its pacing issues. So I think Lord of the Rings is a tighter narrative compared to the Two Towers. Mm-hmm. I think
I can agree with that.
In my second, yeah.
Especially the middle of the film in the Two Towers with the Mad King and all that. It just feels like, okay, let's get past the Mad King. That part in Two Towers really, really does drag in the middle of the movie. I will give you that totally. You know.
The Mad King, it was really just an introduction. And the introduction, it resolved itself pretty quick. It's that part where the middle part after that, where they were going from, the Rohan to Helm's Deep.
Yeah.
The whole escort mission in the middle, that's the part that dragged for me.
Yeah.
Where he gets pulled off the edge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It for some reason, I just didn't really feel for it, you know, despite, you know, the giant wolf riders coming after them. It didn't excite me as much as the climax of that film. But anyways, we're talking about Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. No,
that's tighter narrative.
Sean Bean. Yes.
And, he's really, I mean, everyone's really good in this film, but when you get to that point in which Boromir is killed in this movie, you really feel for him, because despite his flaws and the ring tempting him to go bad, he redeems himself at the end by giving the hobbits a chance to get away, which they don't get away. Unfortunately, they get captured, and you know, we in the second one, you know, they'll get rescued by Aragorn and Legolas. But Boromir does redeem himself before he dies with honor. And
half of them get captured.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, that's why I said Merry and Pippin. Yeah, Merry and Pippin.
Rescued by Treebeard, though.
Yeah. And then we'd even mention Sean Austin, who's really good at Samwise in this movie. You know, throughout the trilogy, you know, he's Frodo's his best friend and his buddy that will look after him no matter what. And their friendship throughout the trilogy is shines on screen, and it's a really important part of the story. And it all begins in this. And when he gets in the boat at the end of the movie, as Frodo's trying to leave, you know, he tells him, Gandalf said, don't you leave him, Samwise Gamgee. And that just sums up their friendship right there. And that's an important part of the movie too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. It would have been funny if,
you can't swim.
It would have been funny if there was an orc that looked like Sloth from the Goonies. And he converted an orc to help Sam and I mean to help Frodo and Sam get across the Mordor.
Hey, you guys. That's funny you mentioned Goonies, because when we get to the news, there's a little bit of Goonies news.
Yeah.
But yeah, Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring, all these movies are on HBO Max since you know, Warner Brothers owns the rights to them now, since it was part of New Line Cinema, I guess, got bought by Warner Bros. A few years ago. But I watched them on Vudu since I had the movies on Vudu. And eventually we'll get around to doing the Two Towers, I'm sure. Like I said, maybe in a few months here, we'll kind of spread these out a little bit. We had talked about last year how to do this trilogy. And I think it gets a little overwhelming to do them all back-to-back weeks, but maybe over a few months. And maybe do Two Towers halfway through the year. Once every
6 months.
That's what I'm saying. Do Two Towers this summer. Do the Two Towers this summer, and then we'll do Return of the King at Christmas time again. All right. Well, let's get to our top five, man. We are retiring the top five after this week. When we next week we have our end of the year episode, and then we will come back in the new year with a new sub feature, which we don't know what it is yet, but we'll come up with something. But we've just felt that the top five has run its course. And so we're retiring after today, but we're going to have some fun today. We each picked our own top five. There's no central theme. It's a free-for-all top five this week. So maybe we do these one by one this week. Who wants to go first with their top five?
Come on.
My top five. My number five is the fact that you guys are offering me solace from my crazy work week.
There we go.
And I'm grateful for it.
Things we're grateful for. Keep going.
Things I'm grateful for.
Are we doing one list by one list or pick one by one?
Well, yeah, I figured because everyone's doing a different top five because it's a free-for-all, we would each person do their own first.
Yeah.
That way.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Number four.
Because it's a free. Basically, Long didn't fucking make one. He's making up as he goes.
No, I didn't. I didn't. But it's a free-for-all. So, number four is the Matt's thick skin for us teasing him every week.
Yeah.
And being a good sport about it. Grateful for that. Although sometimes Matt could be quite cringy with his jokes at times, and we're trying to like, what is he talking about?
Yeah,
half the time. Yeah.
That's
number three. What's your daughter's name again? I'll forget.
Waverly.
Sorry.
Waverly.
Waverly. Waverly's impromptu cameos on the show throughout the year at times. She'll pop up in the background and Mark would go silent for a minute or so. And then we get to talk shit about Mark when he gets off.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Mark has to edit it out, but I don't think he needs to because we don't really talk about him while he's away.
Yeah.
Number two, actually, man, some of the movies that we have been able to talk about, that weren't really feature films, like Spider-Man Today. That was a fun talk. Like some of the recent releases that came out this year that were able to come out that we were able to talk about on the show, which is very welcome. Especially Justice League, Zack Snyder's Justice League. We talked a good amount about that it came out that week. What was another highlight film that was recent?
Godzilla versus Kong.
Spider-Man. Maybe? Godzilla versus Kong. Yeah.
Shang-Chi.
Black Widow.
Did we do Shang-Chi?
Yeah, Shang-Chi and Black Widow. So, yeah. So at least we got to see some major films and talk about it on the show because it's really been like a year and a half since we were able to talk about any recent films because of COVID in 2020.
Right. I agree.
And
I'm hoping I have time to sit down and watch The Matrix before we record whether we record Wednesday or Thursday before Christmas. I'm hoping I have time to watch it before we record.
So. I'm grateful that I have a 3-day weekend next week because of Christmas. And then we can talk about The Matrix since it's on HBO Max, right? And then, of course, number one, really surviving this pandemic, the second half of this pandemic, when putting up with all these stupid variants, you know, and it's just the fact that we're still keeping our sanity by meeting up each week. So I'm grateful for that, too.
There we go.
So that's my five free for all.
You want to go next, Matt?
Yeah. I did top five films that I saw this year. Number five, I've got Godzilla versus Kong. It was fun. I felt like it, you know, cinema was back. Of course, me and Long saw it together. Brought Jake.
Hands.
Yeah, man.
That's cute.
We had two straws, one drink.
No.
And a popcorn bucket. And a popcorn bucket between the legs.
Yeah. Without using hands, by the way.
Yeah.
So he has to reach over. No.
Number four, one we all saw together, Shang-Chi. And I watched it again recently on Marvel on Disney Plus, and
might as well be Marvel Plus.
Might as well be Marvel Plus. Cause I feel like that's the content that's mainly popping out on there. Good film, obviously. You can't wait to see where his art goes. Number three, I've got No Time to Die. It was so hard putting it at three. I felt like it could have been a number one film for the year. Just a awesome film. Long, if you haven't seen it, see it, man. It's
which one?
No Time to Die, James Bond.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, I've been meaning to rent it once it goes down from like theater at home.
It comes out on Blu-ray. It comes out on Blu-ray next week, so it'll probably go
cheaper. Oh, perfect. No. Two, of course, Ghostbusters. Just loads of fun. Do you ever get to see Ghostbusters long?
No, I will probably catch it digital home.
Oh yeah, and I think it's going to come out
as soon as it comes out. I will definitely talk about it.
I think it's like the first or second week of January. I feel like that's
when I saw a date somewhere too. I want to say even maybe right before Long's birthday. I think I read a date like January 15th, 6th, somewhere around there. So yeah.
Yeah. And number one, of course, Spider-Man. I just blew me away, man. We talked about it enough.
Yeah. All right. Well, my top five, I had some fun with this as it is a week before Christmas. And I put down five vintage Star Wars toys that if I was a kid, I would have wanted for Christmas back in the 70s and 80s when I wanted my mom and dad to buy me.
I have an honorable mention. Matt's balls did not escape this year.
He did not make it. With his bloody attack.
Bloody cojones. But thankfully, you were spared the similar fate this year, Mark.
There you go.
Yes.
As a reminder to our listeners, 2020, Mark got bitten by a spider somehow. And what was it?
Just below the testes. I forgot what
Matt's affliction was. But anyway. He got
his surgery. Oh,
right. Surgery.
He got snipped. He got some manhood taken away. So yeah.
Yep.
It was put on pause, by the way.
Yeah.
Not permanently gone.
Yeah. It's there. Yeah. I can't tap into it.
Oh boy. So at number five, man, if I was a kid in the 1970s, 80s, I wanted the Hoth playset, man, so I could recreate the Battle of Hoth with my action figures. And that would have been cool.
Nice.
At number four, man, I would go to my friend's house, and I remember being a kid. He had like the 12-inch figures. My mom and dad never bought any of the 12-inch figures. I had all the little ones, but never got the big ones. I always wanted a 12-inch Boba Fett or Han Solo, and never got it, man. You know, I guess they were kind of expensive back then. At number three, man, I don't know if you guys ever seen it, but the Death Star playset they put out, man, that thing is badass for 1977. Unbelievably, not that expensive even today. For a loose toy, you can find a Death Star playset for about $150. So really not overly expensive. But always wanted one of those. At number two, if I was a kid today, I would want an X-Wing for sure. You know, and then at number one, man, a mint condition Millennium Falcon. You know, I have an old Millennium Falcon, but it's not mint. Mint one will run you $200 to $300, even loose today. But 1970s, 80s, they were about $29, you know. But that was a lot of money back then. So those are five Star Wars, vintage Star Wars toys I would like to have if I could for my
crown jewel
in my vintage collection?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I really like my Darth Vader TIE Fighter I got from Daniel over at Misfit Toys. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's my uncle's favorite.
That, and then I got off eBay one of the role-playing, the laser guns that you played with as kids, you know, like just a role-play toy.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's pretty cool because I had one as a kid, and so I replaced it with that. I still have my own snowspeeder. Yeah, it's missing the hood and everything. It's missing some parts, but because it was mine and my land speeder, those are probably my personal toys that are still part of my collection. So those hold a special place for me, being that they were mine when I was a kid, so. That's a couple items.
Nice.
So, yeah. So, the top five is no more. We'll come back in strong because we're going to do an episode. Because we'll tell people now before we get to the news. We're doing an episode next week, and then we're going to take a couple weeks off, and we're going to either come back either the weekend of the 15th or the weekend of the 23rd, somewhere around there, because we got Long's birthday movie at 23rd. We might do an episode that week before so we can build up for Long's birthday, but we haven't taken a break in a long time. So, And we all need it to recharge our battery. So we're going to come back strong with a Christmas episode next week, and then we're going to take a little break after that. But let's do some news before we preview that Christmas episode. You mentioned the Goonies, man. Warner Brothers, it's just weird. They own the Goonies, and they're going to develop, instead of for HBO Max, they're going to develop a Disney Plus series based on the Goonies. But it's not like a sequel. It's going to be like a retelling of the Goonies. Interesting. I don't know anyone who asked for this. Everyone's wanted a sequel for years, but a lot of the actors are getting too old. I don't see the point in retelling the story of the – I don't understand the point in retelling the story of the Goonies in a Disney Plus show. I think it's also weird that it's Warner Brothers doing it, but it's still going to be on Disney Plus. So I'm not sure how this is going to work. Who knows if it even happens. We've been hearing about Goonies projects in development for many years now, and none of them have come to fruition. So who knows if it happens or not.
I think it'll be fine. It's a generation removed, and so a fresh set of eyes to catch on to it might enjoy it. So
that's fair enough. I thought this was cool news that Wilmer Valderman, I think that's how you say it, is developing
Valderrama.
Is going to produce and star. Valderrama is going to develop. Is going to star and produce in a Zorro show for Disney Plus. We talked about this back when we covered Zorro a few months ago. The time is right for Zorro to come back, you know, these pulp heroes and stuff. So I'm all for that. I hope it's really good, you know, and well done. Definitely.
I still can't picture him as Fez from the 70s show.
Is that who that is?
I feel like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's hard for me to imagine him as Zorro, you know, putting him next to, you know, Antonio Banderas. But you know, let's do it. You know,
people surprise you. Hey, it was, you know, we didn't really do download this cause we wanted to get into Spider-Man, but I rewatched The Dark Knight last weekend just cause I was in a Batman mood after the Japanese Batman trailer came out and like Heath Ledger surprised us all. So, you know, people surprise you. You never know, you know?
Yeah.
So, did y'all see the Japanese Batman trailer? It's only like a minute and 20 long, but man, it's freaking badass. My expectations for this Batman film were kind of, I just, my expectations for it keep going up and up and up. I just think it looks fantastic. Can't wait. The last bit of news I have really is the Blue Beetle movie that's in development is now no longer going to be an HBO Max exclusive. They're going to put it in theaters in the summer of 2023. You know, you might say why, but Blue Beetle, man, is way more popular than people think. He's really, between the Young Justice cartoon and some of the other cartoons out there, DC is going a long way for the Blue Beetle to appeal to kids and to new readers of comics and stuff. And he's actually a little more popular than I think some of us old folks might think. You know, younger people really like Blue Beetle. So, so good for them, you know, get that movie in the theaters and have a Blue Beetle movie. So it could be good. We'll see.
Yeah. But I have a minor trailer news. Michelle Yeoh is doing an A24 movie, and the interesting thing about it is that we have a Goonies actor in there with her, and the actor who plays Short Round.
Oh yeah, I heard about that.
Is acting in his first adult role in what, a decade or two?
Long time,
Michelle Yeoh's husband. Catch the trailer. It's called Everything. What was it called? Let me see.
Does she play like multiple parts in the movie or something too?
Yeah, she plays. Yeah. She plays a regular housewife, but multiverse versions of herself.
I saw that. I didn't see the trailer, but I saw an article about it.
Yeah, yeah. Check out the trailer. It's called Everything. Everything or All Else or something like that.
Yeah. Cool. Good stuff.
Let me see. But yeah, man. And when you watch a trailer, you'll recognize them immediately. Everything and Everywhere All. That's what it's called.
Okay.
Everything and Everywhere All at Once.
Yeah. He doesn't look that much different than he did when he was in the Goonies years ago. He kind of looks like an older version of himself, but he's always been very active in Hollywood. He produces and choreographs things and, you know, he just, he chose to step back from acting and, I believe, raise a family and do other things, which is okay, you know?
Yeah. And Jamie Lee Curtis is in it, too. So it's Jamie Lee Curtis versus Michelle Yeoh.
Interesting. All right, well, let's preview next week's film as we're going to have some fun after talking to, man, some epic movies lately with The Matrix and The Lord of the Rings and Rogue One. But we're gonna go back. We always do a Batman movie at Christmas time for our Batman film. And we did Batman Begins last year. But this year we're going to go back to 1966 and we're going to talk the Adam West Batman the movie.
Emergency. Batman speaking. Warning all of you to brace yourselves for big news.
The biggest.
Tell them, Robin.
Holy superlatives, Batman. It's really exciting. Soon, very soon, Batman and I will be batapulting right out of your TV sets and onto your theater screens.
That's right, Robin. Our first full-length motion picture feature in color opens a whole new world of thrills. The big screen gives us more space on land, sea, and in the air to challenge the most bataclysmic collection of super criminals ever. Their minimum objective must be the entire world.
And here are the dastardly villains. The Catwoman.
You're going to see the perfect crime when I get Batman in my claws.
The Joker.
Have you heard this one? It'll kill you, Batman.
The Penguin.
There are two eggs this wily bird is going to scramble. Batman and Robin.
The Riddler.
Question. Who's going to make the feathers fly and knock Batman and Robin out of the sky?
See, the new weapons in the Bat Arsenal combat the forces of evil. The Batcopter. The exploding, man-eating shark.
Holy sardine!
The relentless Megaton Magnet. The unholy Quartet secret submarine.
Fire one! Fire one!
The Batboat, in action. The Deadly Disintegrator. The attack on the Batcave.
Holy hallucination!
You'll blast through the skies on these mad, manned missiles.
And you'll be with me, Robin, at the Bat Scanner, eavesdropping on Batman's romance. And you'll shudder at the death-dealing Polaris missiles.
Brace yourself, Robin. This could be the end.
And that's just a sample of the exciting exploits ahead in our first feature motion picture.
Holy memoranda, folks. Make a note not to miss it.
Good thinking, Robin.
This was spinned off from the very popular TV show, of course, and this actually was released in theaters. And there was some debate for many years. People thought that it was like a made-for-TV movie. As I know, it was put out in theaters and fairly successful too, if I remember correctly. I have to look that up. But but the show was extremely popular. The movie is good, cheesy, fun, and it's going to be fun to talk about this movie. On next week's show to close out the year, and our year ending show will be next week on the show as we talk Batman the movie. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's been a while since I've watched it. I have it on Blu-ray. I'm going to have to sit down and dive back into it and see how the shark repellent works out.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so. Then I remember him running with the giant bomb.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, but it's fun ridiculous. You get all the villains in there, and it's all, you know, so it'll be a good time to watch and have a mm-hmm. good year-ending show talking Batman the movie. That's next week on the show. But as always, the RebelRadioPodcast.com is where you can find all your needs for the show and social media and all that stuff. And we thank you, as always, for listening. And just continue to be safe out there as we get towards the end of the year. And we'll talk Christmas next week as we end the year. And thanks for listening, though. This has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
This is Long.
Until next time, remember, as always, just go there and do it.
Go there and do it.
Do it.